since the Trump administration ramped up global tariffs, one of the pain points is turning out to be the administrative costs associated with complying with the rules.
It's kind of like detective work. Compliance might involve tracing the origin of small parts and materials that make up an item. Let's say my business imports window frames. Those frames have some aluminum and vinyl in them, also some insulation. The documentation on the amount of aluminum and tracing where it came from would be part of my compliance work.
Shannon Bryant is president of Trade IQ. That's a Wisconsin firm assisting small and mid-sized businesses trying to adhere to new trade rules. Shannon, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start with some basics here. What does it mean to have rules and regulations related to tariffs, and how have the complexity of those rules changed under this Trump administration?
Well, before I answer that, I'd like to set a little bit of a framework for a mental model for people. So just like when you file your income taxes every year, you file a 1040 form on your income taxes. The same thing happens when you import goods into a country, into any country. It's effectively a tax declaration. So taxes were just assessed, or the duty rate was assessed on the commodity. So every commodity that comes into the country is identified through a harmonized tariff code, and that code would determine the rate. So a pencil would have the same duty rate from Mexico, from the EU, from somewhere in Africa, doesn't matter. In coming into the United States, it always had the same rate. In our current environment, that is very different now. And the reason for that is that all of these new tariffs that have been implemented in 2025 are provisional tariffs. So each one is identified by a different provisional code. So the way to think about that is, before, if I was importing a shipment of pencils, I would have one commodity code and one value and one origin for that shipment. Now, any one shipment might have as many as 5, actually up to 32 different provisional codes. So every broker in the United States' workload, their data entry for when they're keying those tax declarations, went up by a factor of 5x. They didn't have that many more people, right? It's not like they had a bunch of additional resources they weren't already using. So that's really constrained the entire workforce for customs brokerage. In the United States, you have to be a licensed U.S. customs broker. So there is a limited number of us who actually are legally allowed to do this. So it really does create a bottleneck. Add to that that all of that complexity lends itself to error, right? And so for importers, they have their brokers taking longer to get things done. Auditing those transactions to even know, like, hey, did I pay the right duty?
Yeah.
Is very difficult. And then if you want to go back and fix it, good luck.
That has also some ripple effects as well. And I'm wondering, you know, will we see audits by the government in 2026 more as these new rules start to really get, you know, take effect?
So we actually already have seen U.S. Customs and Border Protection. We already have seen them start to issue what they call a CF-29. So that's request for information. CF-28s and CF-29s are specific customs forms where they say, hey, prove to me this is correct. One of the things that we're seeing, Section 232 for the steel aluminum tariffs, for example, is that importers were allowed to only pay the 50% tariff that applies on just the steel or aluminum value. But then, okay, so what is the steel or aluminum value? It was incredibly ambiguous. And I myself talked to 3 different customs officers. I got 3 different answers. So it was very much subject to interpretation, and different importers took a different interpretation, rightly or wrongly, due to a lack of guidance, right?
Yeah.
Now, when we're seeing those CF-29s and we see exactly what customs is asking for, and then some recent guidance put out by the base metal C is very different than what the importers were interpreting, right? So that's one risk area that definitely a lot of importers, not through anything nefarious, right, are going to end up with significant risk exposure for that reason.
Just because they interpreted something one way and customs is interpreting something another way. What I want to find out from you, you've mentioned steel and aluminum here a couple times. You know, more than a quarter of Wisconsin's manufacturing base is heavily dependent on metals, on steel and aluminum. You know, do you see more complicated compliance issues when products contain metals?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One thing that's actually kind of interesting about that, and I'll use a product I'm kind of familiar with as an example. So motorcycle parts are subject to Section 232 steel, but not Section 232 aluminum. So if you bring in some motorcycle forks, for example, they're going to flag for Section 232 steel. But what if your forks are aluminum? You still have the extra work and extra administrative burden, those extra provisional codes, to say, no, this is exempt because it doesn't contain steel. So you still have to do that extra work.
That burden of proof.
Right. So even if your stuff isn't really contain what they're looking for. The other component to that that is particularly burdensome and importers are having a really tough time with is the additional reporting requirements for the country of melt and pour for steel or the country of smelt and cast for aluminum. That's not a normal thing that anyone would have ever gotten before. So this is like a whole new body of work for any kind of decent-sized company. This is a full-time job by itself, right? Because you have to go to every different supplier and get what is a mill test certificate to determine it for steel and a certificate of analysis to confirm the melt country for aluminum. So you have to go to your suppliers. Now, what if you have, let's use my motorcycle forks example again, what if you have several different suppliers with components on there and now you have to declare that for each one. So if your $100 set of forks and it is steel, and you have $50 of steel from China and $25 from Europe, and now you're just adding more lines to be able to declare that. And the final part about that that's really, really challenging is there is no de minimis value. So
these are for goods $800 or less, or that rule?
De minimis is actually used, the terminology is used a couple different ways.
Okay.
It means like a negligible value.
Okay.
There is no negligible value that you can discount it. So if your item has like no steel except for the screws, you still have to report the value of the screws and the country of melt and pour. I can tell you, like your hardware supplier, that you typically are buying that from a distributor, not the actual manufacturer, and they have no idea. So you can't get this information even if you wanted to. And if you say unknown other, you pay 200% Russia rate on it.
What is Russia rate?
The Russia has a special rate. So if it's steel coming from Russia, it's 200% instead of the 50%.
Why is that?
Because we're angry at Russia, I guess.
The White House is arguing that tariffs will help to bring back manufacturing to U.S. soil. Do you think that will happen? Do you see that argument?
I'll be honest, amongst the folks that I've talked to, it's done exactly the opposite. I've seen one client that is closing shop in the United States and moving their business to Europe. I've seen several have to do reorgs or layoffs. Almost everyone that I've worked with has said they've seen some demand softening due to price increases that they've had to push through to their clients, and they're starting to feel that pain. So in the short term, I don't see how that's possible.
But what if you are a U.S. company making a U.S. widget with all U.S. materials? Could the tariffs be beneficial?
There's always some winners, right? Mm. So, yes, I suppose that is potentially true. One thing that I'd probably caveat that, though, is even if someone says, I buy all U.S. origin materials, great. So your supplier is making that thing with all U.S. origin materials. That is a very unique set of circumstances, and I would think it's a very narrow set of industries where that would be true. Like, for example, in the United States, paper. We make all of our own paper here. All of our capital equipment for paper products uses virgin materials. This is predominantly U.S. You don't have a whole lot of foreign competition for paper products. But even paper companies where it's, yeah, it's U.S. paper, but caustic and other materials that go into that chemical process.
Yeah, the chemical processes.
They're imported. So it would be very, very unusual that you don't have any foreign trace elements in even a very U.S. good.
One more thing here. Tariff amounts have changed over time after negotiations with countries. You know, goods imported from China have experienced some of the most dramatic swings. How do tariff rate fluctuations affect importers? Could they potentially even get some money back if tariffs go up and down the rate?
So a couple of things. So some of Japan is a great example where they retroactively reduced the reciprocal country rate for Japan and backdated it to August 1st. So yes, you could file post-summary corrections on those and you could get a refund on that. That's not free to do because your broker's not doing free work. It has to be filed with customs. So there's a cost to go get. Yeah. So there are some opportunities for that. And again, adding to the broker burden, right, we have an unprecedented number of corrections getting pushed through. And there's a lot of importers that their broker won't do it. Mm. They just don't have the resource capacity or they try to find somebody else. So they kind of get stuck with it, even though they are eligible, but they can't find anybody to file it.
Shannon, thank you so much for explaining this. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That is Shannon Bryant, president of Trade IQ. It's a Wisconsin firm that helps companies comply with trade rules. We've been talking about how small businesses are navigating tariff compliance issues.